jumper on the way. Good! Tyus Battle nails the three.
Dungy leaps and into the end zone for Dungy. A touchdown.
If that's not on every highlight show tonight, then I don't know who's watching.
Howard for Dungy. Soaring through the air. High-flying Slovakian.
Screen pass here. He'll get one. And he stays alive, and he's got room to the 10. One man to beat. He'll do it. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And for Syracuse, party time.
The upset pulled by the Orange. They defeat Clemson 27-24.
Now, the penetration. Step back. Oh, a pressure bucket for Tyus Battle.
This is Orange Nation with Stephen Fonte and Seth Goldberg, powered by Drivers Village and Hummel's Office Plus.
Welcome in, welcome aboard a Monday edition of Orange Nation here on ESPN Radio. 97.7, 100.1, ESPN, Syracuse.com, and the ESPN app. Many ways to listen, many ways to get involved. 315-437-7644 is the telephone number. 2880644 is the text line. And, of course, on Twitter, at SethGoldberg17, at SteveInfanteNC9, and at ESPN Syracuse. Before we start, we've got Steve back with us. It's good to see you again.
It's good to see you as well.
Good to have you back.
I'll say what I said last time. I took a few days off, and I realized I took all of last week off. And again, as you know, it's family related. My father-in-law is still fighting down in New York City, and so I do appreciate all the support, all the prayers. We need him. We still need him. But hopefully I'll be back at work for this entire week. So thanks for everybody for reaching out, you know, whether it's social media or just text messages, means a lot to me and my family. So continued prayers and off we go with another show.
Yeah, and I know it's been tough. So why don't we do this? Let's just dive in and talk some sports, and we'll get back to normal, so to speak.
I'll tell you this: the basketball I watched over the weekend, it was a nice distraction everything going on. That was that Elite Eight is, if that was not the best Elite Eight, it's certainly right up there. I mean, we saw four just historic games. I mean, it was when you package them all together. I'm saying that was. That was a weekend to remember for college basketball.
Yeah, and you know that's where I wanted to start. We can get to Duke in a little bit. We can get to Virginia in a little bit, because I think those are both really interesting storylines, and we've talked about those two teams a lot throughout the year, given that they're in the two ACC, they're the two ACC schools. But this weekend, Steve, this Elite Eight was decided by the fewest combined points ever. The margin of victory in the four games was the closest it has ever been. And, you know, was every game great? No. Like actual basketball great? No. Were they all close? Yes. Were they all entertaining? Yes. Were they all riveting? Absolutely. And even if the game wasn't, you know, a fantastic game, you know, I didn't think Auburn and Kentucky was particularly great, but it was close the entire time, and you were watching the entire time because you couldn't look away.
I was wondering where you were going with that. That's the one game. Because the other three, were fantastic to watch. I mean, they were a whole lot of fun.
Yes.
The shot making, especially in that Virginia-Purdue game.
Oh, my goodness. It was amazing.
You know, Ty Jerome, the one play that sticks out for me from him, you know, he splits two defenders, and he's kind of in traffic. There's 2 seconds on the shot clock. He just lofts up this, you know, high shot off the glass. I mean, the shot making in that game between Kyle Guy and what Carson Edwards did, the 42 points and just pulling up from, you know, he's a couple feet over half court, and he's well within range. The shot making in that game was unbelievable. Obviously, the way regulation ended, Michigan State and Duke, you know, two heavyweights going down on the wire, decided by, you know, essentially a missed free throw. You had, you know, two number one seeds go down. You had Auburn, you know, without its best player, you know, knock off a conference rival. I mean, you had so many storylines, and the games, yeah, outside of Auburn, Kentucky, it wasn't a great game. It was a great finish.
Great finish.
The basketball, it was fantastic basketball really all weekend long.
You mentioned Carson Edwards, so I might as well bring this up. Second time in the tournament that Carson Edwards has scored 42 points, which means he now has the two second most points, you know, in an NCAA tournament game since Jerry McNamara scored 43. So he's butting right up against that to set like a new most points since mark, except he just can't quite get over that one.
And Jerry against BYU. Carson Edwards, man, he's so fast, and he'll pull from anywhere. I mean, he's got a quick release. He's got a little Steph Curry in him. Just the way that he's able to get off shots, even when guys are guarding him closely. And since we're bringing up comparisons, I couldn't help but think, as I was watching that Auburn-Kentucky game, as I'm watching Jared Harper go to work, he reminds me of Johnny Flynn. He does. The way, kind of his stature, his speed, the way with which he attacks the basket, gets to the free throw line. He was 11 for 11 from the free throw line in that game against Kentucky.
He was really great.
I see a lot of Johnny Flynn when I watch Jared Harper play.
Yeah, you know, it was amazing to me watching Carson Edwards, because we know this, right? We've seen Virginia. We know they're a great defensive team. We know that DeAndre Hunter, if he isn't the best defensive player in the country, he's right up there. He's going to be drafted in the lottery because of what he could do offensively, sure, but also because he's a lockdown defender. Kihei Clark, coming off the bench, a different kind of defender, but has been very good at times this year. He struggled with Tyus Battle, but DeAndre Hunter didn't, right? Tyus had a bit of a height advantage on Kihei Clark. Both of them struggled with Carson Edwards. Both of them struggled to contain him. He was taking step backs and shooting over DeAndre Hunter. He was getting past and getting around Clark. It was pretty incredible to watch what we know is a really good defensive team and the two best defenders on that team having trouble with somebody.
You know, and I'll go back the round before, as you know, you looked at that Tennessee-Purdue matchup, and as I was trying to figure out, all right, who's going to win this game, I looked at it as, well, Tennessee's well-rounded, right? They're known for their balance, and they've got a bunch of guys who can score and a bunch of guys who can beat you. And you had Purdue that it's really a one-man show, or it feels like a one-man show. Now, it didn't turn out to be a one-man show in that particular game,
right.
But you know, as you look at the matchup, you're like, can one guy really beat a really good team? And Tennessee was a really good team. You know, obviously Virginia's a really good team. Can one guy do it himself? And I didn't think he could. And again, he didn't do it all himself in that Tennessee game, but he pretty much did it all himself in that Virginia game. And to me, to be able to do that against one of, if not the best team in the country, that was eye-opening to me. It's one thing to do it against Tennessee when you're getting some help. To do that with a spot on the Final Four on the line against maybe the best team in the country, or certainly one of the top three or four best teams in the country, that was a more impressive 42. If there could ever be
if you
can compare 42 point performances, that was the more impressive one.
Oh, it absolutely was. It absolutely was. Given what Virginia is, and we'll dive into Virginia coming up in a little bit. But you know, you mentioned the Auburn Kentucky game and how close it was. The Michigan State Duke game was just haymakers. The Texas Tech and Auburn, like, making the Final Four. They were far more likely, if you asked me when the college football playoff was put in, which one are they going to get into first, the football Final Four or the basketball Final Four? Neither of them are great, right, like, that level in football right now, but I would have said football first, right? Like, that was
obviously
so much more obvious.
I mean, look at
their
track records. I mean, they haven't been to the Final Four in basketball.
Right, exactly.
So, of course, you would have picked football over basketball. You know, a lot of people are saying, you know, was this the best, you know, regional final weekend ever? And I know that 2005 keeps popping up in the debate about, well, you know, maybe that was the best. So back in 2005, there was that Illinois-Arizona game that Illinois was down 14.
Right.
With 3.5 minutes to go, crazy comeback. One, you know, maybe the best comeback in NCAA tournament history. Illinois.
There's Darren Williams in Illinois, right?
Yeah, 17-3 run to close out regulation. They end up winning it in overtime. There was Louisville and West Virginia went into overtime. Michigan State, Kentucky went into double overtime. And North Carolina beat Wisconsin by 6 in a really close game, entertaining game. It was 88-82. Compare that to what happened, you know, this weekend. You had two overtime games. One of them, you know, obviously went into double overtime back in 2005, but you had two overtime games. You had two top seeds go down. You had a last-second shot that forced overtime in that Virginia game. I don't know. When you stack them up side by side, and I know people say prisoner of the moment, the fact that you had such royalty this weekend with Duke and Michigan State and, you know, Kentucky involved, and you did back in 2005 as well. But I don't know. I think I might give the edge to this weekend and just how well played these games
were.
They
were great. I mean, it's hard to get around that too much. I mean, the games were just all compelling. They were all interesting. For the most part, they were just all really well played. You go back to the shot making, and that was the thing that really impressed me the most in that Virginia game, and in the Duke game. The teams were just going back and forth and landing shot after shot after shot, and it felt like as the teams went up and down the court, they were going to make the next shot they took. When Carson Edwards pulled up from the logo, it felt like it was going in. You thought something crazy was going to happen as you saw Virginia go back and chase down the loose ball. It felt like something crazy was going to happen, and it. When you have that feeling that every shot's going to go down, it seems to, doesn't that seem to be the mark of a good game? When you think everything's going in, when it's like, oh yeah, sure, Carson Edwards can pull from 35 because of course that's going to go down. Like, to me, that's kind of is what makes a good game. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm weird in that way, but I like when people are making shots and hitting ridiculous shots, and it's just so fun and entertaining to watch.
It is, and you know I'm a golf fan, and I know you're not big into golf, but it's like on Sunday at like the Masters, and you've got the top five guys on the leaderboards, and they're just exactly. They're just throwing darts at the pins. They're knocking it stiff within 3 feet of the cup, and it's birdie after birdie, and the shot making is in part what makes it exciting. And I know there's a time and place for the U.S. Open, and they want one under par to win that tournament. I would prefer, guys just going after sticks on Sunday opposed to, well, I'm going to try to avoid the rough because if I get in the rough, I'm going to
end up getting a double bogey. So what you're saying is there's a time and place for Texas Tech and Michigan, and there's a time and place for everything else we saw this weekend.
Yeah.
And for the most part, there's not really a time and place for Michigan Texas Tech because I'd rather never see that.
I'm more into what we saw this weekend with, and I think everybody is. I mean, the entertainment value was fantastic. I'll say this about the Purdue-Virginia game. It's unfortunate. It was kind of anticlimactic, that last possession, because, it's a three-point game, and Purdue's got the ball, and then Edwards, I think, thought he was going to get fouled, so then he forced the pass, and then the pass goes out of bounds, and that's how the game ended in overtime. And that's unfortunate, because you would like to see,
to see him put up a shot.
Yeah, pull up a shot from, even if it was a deep three. If there's a guy who can hit it, it's going to be him. I didn't love the shot, the possession before when, he was looking for the lead. But again, he had been making that shot all game. So
he was hitting contested threes all game. You might as well keep trying.
How I feel about that, that.
The heat check? You don't like heat
checks? Well, in that spot, so often, and this is a pet peeve of mine, and whether it's high school or college right now, I guess even in the pros to some degree, I don't watch a ton of NBA. But in the college game, how often do you see a team run down the shot clock, or last possession of a half or a regulation, and they just end up with that, they settle for a three? And I felt like, to some degree, Edwards, even though he had been so hot, take it to the basket, in my opinion, take it to the basket on that play with the game on the line. It was a one-point game. Good things can happen. Good things do happen when you take it to the basket. I would have preferred to see him put the ball on the floor there. But again, if there's a guy who could make that shot, he'd shown for 40 minutes and 45 minutes, I guess, that he could make that shot.
Yeah, and he was incredible. The games ended up being fantastic. Why don't we do this? Let's take a time out here. We'll come back. We'll dive into a little bit more, a couple of the big storylines. We want to get to Virginia. We want to get to Duke. Phone lines open the entire show today, 315-437-7644. We're talking about the Final Four and the matchups being set here on Orange Nation.
Live from Armory Square,
this is Orange Nation with Stephen Fonte and Seth Goldberg.
Back here on Orange Nation, we go until 2 o'clock here on ESPN Radio. Seth Goldberg, Stephen Fonte with you. And Steve, I mentioned before we want to do a little Duke, a little Virginia. Why don't we start off with the Cavaliers? Because, I know this is not going to sound, people probably aren't going to be happy with this, is the best way to put it. I'm happy for Tony Bennett. I'm happy for Virginia that they kind of got out there and they went and did what they should, and they pushed it and they pushed it over the top, and they got to the Final Four. You could kind of tell what it meant to Tony Bennett and to that team and to his family. And I hate the narrative of, oh, that guy, so-and-so can't win the big one, so-and-so can't get over the hump. Because quite literally every coach has had that narrative until they actually go out and do it. Coach K and Roy Williams and Jim Boeheim and Dean Smith and everybody has. So it was only a matter of time. And to throw that on Tony Bennett after, two or three years of it, I don't know, seemed a little unfair to me.
I'm glad you brought this up. And you and I did not talk about this before the show. And I'm glad you brought it up because that was one of my big observations from the weekend or one of the things that I kept coming back to me as I'm watching these games. If If Diakite doesn't make that shot at the end of regulation, Virginia loses.
Yes.
And let the piling on begin with, you know, Tony Bennett can't win the big one and, you know, not a great coach and they choked again. Is Matt Painter any less of a coach because Diakite makes that shot?
And no, not at
Carson
all.
Edwards, you know, his go-ahead three with under 30 seconds to go rims out and Virginia gets the rebound. I mean, is he any less of a coach? Is no. Mark Few any less of a coach because, you know, Texas Tech knocked him off in the Elite Eight? Is Jim Boeheim any less of a coach because Keith Smart, you know, made a shot along the baseline that if he misses, now he's got two national titles.
And he has won 15 years earlier and he doesn't have to hear that crap for 15 years.
It bothers me. If you're a good coach, you're a good coach. And Tony Bennett is a great coach.
Yes.
And I think we would all agree to that. And I know there was some joking going on last week. Here, you're going to play something for us right now?
Okay. Seth, I got a hypothetical here for you.
Go for it.
If Virginia somehow, some way, were to lose in the first round again to a 16 seed.
They're not going to. But
fine,
on.
But this is the point of a hypothetical. Would they have to fire Tony Bennett? Because you have to fire someone. If they were to be a one seed
goodness.
In two
Stop.
Straight years and lose to a 16 seed in two straight years.
Get out.
You would have
Get
to
out. Get out. Get out.
Turn his mic off.
I did. And I forced him out of the studio.
That's the first time I've heard that audio, by the way. we'll let Tommy defend himself later in the show. But I'm not sure you can defend that position. And I know that, you know, you guys have been going back and forth and having some fun with it. And that's great. But Tommy's not alone in thinking
that
Tony Bennett can't coach or Tony Bennett can't win the big one. Or, you know, look at Virginia choked again. Tony Bennett's a great coach. Mark Few is a great coach. Matt Painter is a great. There are a lot of great coaches. Buzz Williams is a great coach. You know,
Williams just got $3.5 million a year from Texas A&M. Imagine how much more money he would have gotten if that tip-in went in.
I'm just going to say, I mean, is he any less of a coach because the tip-in doesn't go in? Is Johnny Dawkins any less of a coach because, you know, they had two cracks at beating Duke and it just didn't quite go their way? That's the narrative that bothers me, is that, you know, if one play goes differently, you know, the whole legacy of a coach changes. And I get it. Like, I understand it's our society and it's reality. But my God, like, Tony Bennett is one of the best coaches in college basketball. And it's almost like he needed to win that game to be validated in some people's eyes, but not in my eyes.
So there are 350 college basketball teams. I would say how many of the 350 would do what I'm going to suggest, but I would probably imagine any of them outside of a certain level. So let's say outside of the Power Five, the Big East, right? So the six biggest basketball conferences. How many coaches, if Tony Bennett were to come on the open market tomorrow, how many college basketball programs are getting rid of the head coach that they have in place to hire Tony Bennett? So you're talking about 70 schools. 60 of them?
No. That's way too many.
You don't think?
No. No. I get your point, but getting rid of, I mean, you're talking about getting rid of like Mike Bray? No. Notre Dame's not getting rid of Mike Bray. No.
So they would be one of the 10?
No, there's more than 10. Maybe
it's a significant,
maybe
it's
half.
More than, it's a significant number,
maybe,
is my point.
Maybe half or a little more than half.
It's a significant number.
I don't know.
I mean, I'd have to run through all the coaches, but like, let's just do this. In the Pac-12, so Mike Hopkins is staying. Dane Altman's probably staying. Anybody else that you wouldn't trade? Anybody else that you wouldn't trade for Tony Bennett?
I was going to say, the Pac-12 will like, help your argument.
No, but I just went conference by conference. Okay, like, you're going to keep Bill Self. And you're going to keep Chris Beard, Texas A&M. Anybody else that, like, in that conference that you're like, oh, we cannot do without Tony Bennett. Like, we would not trade that guy for Tony Bennett.
I don't know.
Like, the ACC is a weird animal because you have Coach K and you have Roy Williams and you have Jim Boeheim and you have Mike Bray and you've got, like, institutions at their place. So it's like a weird animal. But if you get outside of the ACC, like in the Big East, you're telling me Georgetown wouldn't trade Patrick Ewing for Tony Bennett?
I don't know the answer to that. And again, I think some of it too would come into like, do they owe these guys money? Are you saying like
in a perfect world, if they could just make the clean swap and they can have Tony Bennett for their head coach?
That's a little different than just cutting ties and firing your coach and paying a lump sum amount of money to get rid of that guy to bring in Tony Bennett. 10 is a generous number. I mean, it's okay. So maybe it's more than half. Maybe you're talking 40 of the 70. But no, I don't think
he's a fantastic coach that a lot of people would like to have. And that's why I cut the number down from like 350, because everybody below a certain point would be like, coach, Rick Beard, you've been at Belmont for 35 years. Like, enjoy retirement. We're going to go hire Tony. Like, there would be plenty of schools out there that would go and gladly make that change. And what he's done to get this team back, largely the same team that they had last year, and to bring them back off of losing to a 16 seed to get to a Final Four, it is remarkable. I mean, it's incredible to see how this has happened. You said it, I said it. I hate that can't win the big one narrative. And it was thrown out there before the game on Saturday of like, hey, Matt Painter or Tony Bennett, either one of them going to be going to their first Final Four. I think Matt Painter is a good coach. Like, I don't think anything less of him because Diakite made a shot at the buzzer that forced overtime, or that Carson Edwards couldn't score 50 instead of 42. Like, I think no differently of him.
Right. And I do think there's a difference between underachieving and, that can't win the big one narrative, right? Because there are coaches that do underachieve. They get a lot of talent, and you feel like, man, they should do more with what they have. And I get that. But when you get to like an Elite Eight and it doesn't go your way, or Tom Izzo going into yesterday, I want to say it was 1-11 against Coach K. Is that right? Does that mean that Coach K is that much of a better coach than Tom Izzo?
No,
he might have the better players or the better team.
Have you now seen, by the way, what the two tournament wins are by Izzo against?
It was
ending Zion in that team. The other one was ending JJ Redick's senior year.
Okay, that was pretty significant as well.
Those are pretty big wins that he's had over.
So he's 2-11 all time against Coach K. If they had lost the game, so say, Barrett makes the free throw, goes into overtime, and Duke wins, and now he's 1-12 all time against Coach K. Does that mean that Izzo can't beat Coach K, or is that no? I mean, I do realize that there are coaches that tend to underachieve, but Tony Bennett, Matt Painter, Mark Few. And if you want to fight about Mark Few, like that's the thing. Like, do his teams underachieve in the postseason, or are they just maybe just not as good as the teams that they're playing? Right?
Are they just so much better than what they are playing from January through the beginning of March, but not as good as everybody else in the country? And I think that's possible. I heard them talking about this. I think it was on College Game Day yesterday when it was Seth Greenberg and Jay Billis and Jay Will, and they were saying something along the lines of, these guys are in our consciousness at the beginning of the year. They go away from the college basketball world for 2 months, and then they're back, right? Because they go out and they play this fantastic non-conference schedule almost every year. They played Duke, Tennessee, and UNC this year in their non-conference. Plus, they were in Maui where they played Duke. So they played a great non-conference schedule. They're right there. They're in the middle of the college basketball world at the beginning of the season. Then they go play in the West Coast Conference and nobody pays attention to them. And then they come back in March and they're a one seed. And so you're always thinking about them, not so much in January, February, but like they just kind of show up again. So does it mean that they're just so much better than everybody else, so you don't really pay attention to them, but like then you throw them on a court with Duke, or you throw them on a court with Texas Tech, or you throw them on a court with these Power 5 programs and they're just not as good as them? Or do they underachieve ever once they get to the tournament?
And again, I wouldn't say that losing in the Elite Eight to a red-hot Texas Tech team is underachieving. On that particular day, Texas Tech was just a little bit better. So does that mean they underachieved? I mean, they were a one seed. They got to the Elite Eight. They came within a possession or two of making it to the Final Four. So to me, and we know anything can happen in the NCAA tournament, I don't think that is underachieving in my mind.
No, I mean, I don't necessarily think it is either. And I think my thoughts on Mark Few. I think he's a fantastic coach. I mean, look at what, just look no further than what he's built at Gonzaga. They've been to the tournament every year he's been their coach.
Listen, if you get knocked out before the Sweet 16, like if you're a top three seed every year, and every year you get knocked out before the Sweet 16.
That was happening to Villanova for a while.
Right, that is underachieving. But making it to the Elite Eight and, you know, losing in a really well-played game to a team that just made a couple extra shots than you, that's not underachieving. That's basketball.
Yeah, and look, I'm excited to keep watching Virginia because when they make shots, they're actually a pretty fun team to watch, right? When now that they have this whole offense thing down also to go along with their defense, they're actually a pretty entertaining team to watch this year.
Yeah, and I mean, between Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome, the shot making in that second half.
Insane.
You know, matching Carson Edwards. They needed two guys to match what Carson Edwards was doing by himself. But, you know, after Guy, he got off to kind of a slow start. He played great in the second half. Ty Jerome did a lot of really good things. I still don't know who the best player on that team is. I mean, this is a debate that we've been having for like...
I think it's DeAndre Hunter, but he didn't really do anything yesterday.
He wasn't over the weekend. He wasn't.
He did nothing.
And he couldn't stop Carson Edwards. I think he finished with 10 or 12 points. But, you know, Kyle Guy, Ty Jerome, they led the way. I still don't know who the best player on that team is, but they are fun to watch, and I like Tony Bennett a lot.
Can I read a tweet for you totally off topic before
sure.
we go to break? That's going to get you your hopes up for maybe a split second.
Okay.
I'm retiring. In my spare time, I'll be tweeting. Hashtag LFG. That is the first tweet of Tom Brady.
I hope that's true, but he's
except it's April 1st.
Yeah, right. So it's April Fool's Day. Yeah, he's probably playing for five more years, Seth.
He's at five. That's it. I think he's just going forever.
I wouldn't be surprised.
They're just gonna keep wheeling him out there. He's gonna be throwing touchdowns. You know, sitting down, in his shotgun, not move. Let's take a timeout on that note. We're back with more after this on ESPN Radio.
Our take on the day's top stories. It's Today's Business on Orange Nation.
Orange Nation rolling along with Today's Business. It's brought to you by Grossman St. Amour's CPAs. Seth Goldberg, Stephen Fonte, and we bring in Tommy Hogan now. Before the headlines, did Steve want to get to anything with Tommy, or are we going to get to that?
Well, I think Tommy deserves the right to... speak his mind one last time.
Do I have the right to turn his mic off again?
No.
Well, okay. Let's just calmly talk about this.
Okay.
So,
I'm already fired up.
Well, don't be fired up. So, have you changed your mind?
I have not.
Okay. So, if Tony Bennett lost in the first round of this year, you think that Virginia should have fired him?
Correct. And here is my explanation. As a one seed,
we'll give you a short leash.
Okay. If you're a one seed and lose to a 16 seed, it's the most embarrassing thing you can do in college basketball, really. If you do it one year, it's a fluke, and he had DeAndre Hunter out, fine, it's a fluke, it's not going to happen again. If it were to happen a second game, it becomes a culture thing.
Hold on.
It becomes an issue if you do it 2 years in a row.
I just thought of this because you brought it up, so I'll butt in with a question. What's more embarrassing? What Virginia did losing to a 16 seed as the number one overall seed in the tournament, or what the Nerlens Noel Kentucky team did, which is they were the number one team in the country preseason and then lost in the first round of the NIT.
I think it's Virginia, but that's fair.
Really?
Yeah, because if you go in with preseason, like you haven't even played yet, it's not your fault that you're being ranked the number one team in the country.
They did it over 35 games, and Virginia did it over one.
All right, Tommy, now your leash is getting shorter
that's
now.
That's fine. I have a great defense. It becomes a culture thing if you lose 2 years in a row. The only way to change culture in college basketball is to fire your head coach. There's nothing else you can really do. The roster wasn't going to change at all. They were keeping all their guys. You had Kyle Guy coming back, Ty Jerome, DeAndre Hunter, all these guys coming back. It's like what the Toronto Raptors did with their Dwayne Casey last year. They kept going to they were the top two, top three seed in the East every year. I believe they were the one seed in the East last year, if not the two seed. They fired him because they kept making early exits in the playoffs. In the playoffs, they had to change their culture.
So we brought up the example of the Warriors setting the wins record and then not finishing off with the championship. If they had done that 2 years in a row, does Steve Kerr lose his job?
No, you're losing to Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook.
But they did. So it depends they lost to the Cavs.
And again, that's in a series. You're talking about a one game, you know, fluky type situation.
You are so much superior to that opponent. You should win 100 times out of 100 times the UMBC. And I was watching the game this year where they're down at halftime. I wasn't sure if I wanted them to lose because I didn't know if I wanted my point to be proven wrong or not. But I was dying laughing the whole time. Like,
do you think Tony Bennett's a good coach? Is Tony Bennett a good coach?
I think he's a very good coach. But if
so you don't fire a very good coach.
You have to change something. You have to change the culture.
I think he's on the Hall of Fame track. Like, it's really hard to fire that.
And you don't.
He just got to his first Final Four and you got him.
Yeah, I think he's on the track to go to the Final Four.
And in order to lose to a 16, you're not going to like this, but in order to lose to a 16 as a 1, you have to be a 1.
And I don't care what you do in the regular season.
To bring this team back after that devastating loss and then to be a 1 seed the next year and one of the favorites. I understand it would be a huge disappointment. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I understand colossal disappointment, but I don't think you fire the coach.
Something would have to change, and in college basketball, the thing that you change is your head coach. You would have to change something if you do what has never been done in the history of college basketball 2 years in a row. You have to change something. I don't care what you do in the regular season. If you disappoint that greatly 2 years in a row, you have to be fired.
I don't think either of us agree with you even.
No, I was going to say, I respect the fact that you are trying
sticking
to back
up.
Yeah, well, you're sticking to your guns. You're trying to back up your point. I respect that, but I respectfully say that you're wrong.
Any coach with motivation, this
if John Calipari, you know,
he saved his job. Hang Congrats, on. Tony Bennett.
Seth brings up Nerlens Noel, that team preseason number.
That was a far more disappointing year to me.
They lose in the first round of the NIT. If Kentucky had done that the next year, is Calipari losing his job?
Maybe, yeah.
No, he's not. No, he's not. He's
you
John
have to
Calipari.
Change something. Also, no, Nerlens Noel got hurt that year, right?
Yeah, but they still weren't good before he got hurt.
That's part of the. Maybe they still make the NIT, but still, part of the reason why they lost in the first round. One of the best players got hurt.
There are certain coaches that are bulletproof in these kinds of scenarios, and Calipari's in that group. Tony Bennett's in that group. I mean, there are
the boy
whatever
is
15
going,
or 20 coaches in that group.
This was faulty glass. If this happened, the bullet would have went through the faulty bulletproof glass, and I think you have to change something.
Okay, we both disagree, but that's I respect the fact you're trying to back up your point.
All right, so on Adam Schefter's podcast today, Sean McVay he said he pulled a prank on Cliff Kingsbury when the two went out to dinner with Patrick Mahomes, and let me stop there. That's a little weird, right? Why is Sean McVay and Cliff Kingsbury going to dinner with Patrick Mahomes? I understand the Cliff Kingsbury-Patrick Mahomes connection a little bit.
Well, McVay got Kingsbury's job, so come on. They're friends. They're buddies. They've got to show that they've got to. Now you've got to back it up.
Patrick Mahomes got Cliff Kingsbury his job.
No. In the release, it specifically said Cliff Kingsbury is friends with Sean McVay. So now you have to keep up appearances and you have to go to dinner every once in a while. Look, this is Sean McVay doing him a solid. Hey, congratulations. You got a job because you're friends with me. Let's just keep up appearances here.
Well, Sean McVay pulled the tampering card in the NFL and said that he has a mutual friend with Cliff Kingsbury that he put in Kingsbury's phone as this mutual friend as Roger Goodell. So then this friend, he had this friend send McVay a text message saying, "I can't believe you're at dinner with Cliff Kingsbury and Mahomes. You know better than this. This is tampering. You're both losing picks." Cliff Kingsbury then thought that he was losing his number one overall pick. He said, McVay said, "I showed Cliff the text and he saw a ghost. I said, you better call Cardinals general manager Steve Keim right now." And then he said, "I thought I was going to lose the number one overall pick."
I love it. I think it's awesome. So funny.
It's a great prank.
It's a great prank. It is better than Tom Brady's prank. It is better than this prank I just saw, by the way, from University of Wisconsin, saying that they're going to get rid of jump around between the third and fourth quarters. That's not even funny.
Tom Brady's
so the
prank wasn't even funny.
Sean McVay's is so much better than anything else. Did you see the U.S. Open tennis?
Yeah.
What they did?
I did.
It's a shame that they wasted a great idea on an April Fool's prank, isn't it? Like, could you imagine if we had dogs running around as the ball boys? That would have been fantastic.
Got it in baseball. In some minor league parts they do it. It's pretty cool.
We should do it. I don't know that I'd want to play with that tennis ball again, but we should try it.
I saw recently where a dog, the batter dropped his bat on a swing, and the dog runs out to grab it. It was still mid at bat. It was just a strike, and he dropped his bat on. And he had to, like, kind of shoo the dog away, and everybody's calling the dog to come back while he's just, like, sitting in his lap, basically, at home plate. Other story I've got. starting senior forward from Michigan State, Kenny Goins, who ended up making the basket yesterday that turned into the game-winning three against Duke to head to the Final Four, is still paying off his $17,000 loan that he applied for in order to walk on at Michigan State his freshman year. He had scholarship offers to Central Michigan, Detroit, Mercy, Buffalo, and had some interest from Ivy League teams. He wanted none of it. He was dead set on Michigan State. They wouldn't give him a scholarship. He went, walked on, and now he's a starting forward for them his senior year.
Yeah, I think story like that, a story like Luke May, who went from a walk-on to an all-ACC player, they're just amazing. Should scholarships be, like, retroactive in some way? Like, is there a way that when a player is a former walk-on that gets to a certain point, when they are not only a scholarship player, but, like, above and beyond a scholarship player, like, can you go back and, like, find a way to reimburse them? It's opening Pandora's box, I know, and it's probably something crazy that you can't actually do. But, like, isn't it a little bit ridiculous that, like, Luke May had to pay his way through college for 2 years before becoming an all-ACC player? Like, that's a little nuts to me.
I mean, what would you suggest, though?
Like, I don't know.
What's the fix?
Pay him back?
Isn't it just basically like you're paying him money,
yes,
though?
Like,
that would be against the rules.
Michigan State pays off this loan.
Yeah, pay off their loan.
I think so. I think you can. Here's the thing. They like Braden Beyer, for some reason, like, he didn't, like.
Right, but is the reason he didn't get a scholarship, and again, I don't have the roster in front of me, but did they just not have enough scholarships?
I don't know.
Like, they,
Tom Izzo said he didn't give him a scholarship because, quote, in our minds, he wasn't quite good enough.
Okay. My guess is that.
That's funny.
They had used all their scholarships.
Maybe.
And if that's the case, then, again, per rules, they can't go back and retroactively give him a scholarship when they had no scholarships available.
That's fair. That's a good point. Yeah, if you're already over the limit that year, you can't give a retroactive one. Fair. But I think Michigan State should be paying off some of this, especially for what he just did in the Elite Eight. Maybe that's an NCAA violation.
I think it is.
It absolutely is.
Fair.
That.
All right.
Today's business brought to you by Grossman Santa Moore CPAs. Remain focused with today's business on helping clients prosper by providing comprehensive accounting, auditing, tax planning, and preparation services. Visit GSACPAs.com.
What I learned today, Tommy, is that you should not be an athletic director of a university because you're suggesting committing violations and suggesting firing Tony Bennett.
He was coaching for his job against Gardner-Webb, and I stand by it.